and welcome to our AA meeting for Planet FM 104.6. My name is Sally. I am an alcoholic and I will be chairing our meeting this morning. Would you all like to help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation, or religion. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Thank you for joining us this morning. Today, our speakers are Sarah, Sian and Siddiqui, who will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. And I would like to invite Sarah to share with us this morning.
Thank you, Sally. Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic. My story started when I was about 10 years old. I remember packing up a drink that my mother was drinking at a party, and it was a gin and tonic, and Mum was a really slow drinker, and so it was kind of warm, but I picked it up and I drank it really quickly, and something just went off in my brain, and I can't even explain what it was, but what I do remember is a craving for more and sort of a thirst, I guess, for it. And so my journey kind of progressed from there, and obviously in my sort of early childhood I didn't get access to alcohol, but when I was about 16, 17, when I started going out with friends and had more independence and access to alcohol, I just always got drunk. And for me, it gave me, I was quite introverted and quite shy as a teenager. I'd had a lot of change because we shifted around quite a lot with my dad's work. So I was sort of constantly starting again at new schools, and alcohol just seemed like such a magic potion to me. Suddenly I relaxed. I felt like part of the crowd. I was funny. I could fit in. I was carefree. But obviously my behaviours were sort of incongruent with who I was authentically. I'm friendly and I'm social, but I'm kind of a little bit introverted, and my behaviours when I've been drinking become sort of quite embarrassing and outrageous, and I say and do things that I certainly would never consider doing when I'm sober. So it continued through and was sort of a bit problematic at university. Although I was in good company and a lot of other teenagers experimenting with alcohol, and although my behaviour caused me shame and embarrassment a lot, I was in good company. Other people were doing the same thing. But what happened is, with alcoholism is a progressive disease, And by the time I sort of reached middle age, I was just stuck in this horrible pattern of drinking two bottles of wine every night. And I was nudging over into that third bottle. And I drank in the end a lot at home. I am married, and so I'm not living on my own, but I got very cunning and crafty with hiding alcohol. And yeah, I just, my world got very small because I didn't want to go anywhere where I had to drive, or my preference was just to be at home and just basically get drunk. And I would, you know, pass out, I guess, fairly early in the night. I'd fall asleep on the couch about 8:30 or 9 o'clock and then go up to bed, and I'd wake up about probably 2 or 3 in the morning with a terrible thirst and swear to myself that the next day I wasn't going to do it, it was going to be a new start. And I honestly meant that. And what happened was by 11 o'clock the next morning, or getting towards lunchtime, that resolve had gone, and I would be on the way home from work going to the supermarket and buying those three bottles of wine. And it was my behaviour. Like, I've seen other people that drink quite heavily at functions and events, and they get a bit kind of silly and a little bit kind of giggly, but their behaviour wasn't like mine. And when I watch other normal drinkers, they tend to kind of drink quite slowly, and they're not obsessed with that drink in front of them. When I was drinking alcoholically, which I always have done, I drank very, very quickly as well. And I used to have to watch other people to kind of pace myself so that that glass of wine wasn't gone in two ticks and attracting attention. But what I would often do is, I would drink at home after I'd got home from functions and events, so I could control it. Sometimes I would preload a little bit before I went out, but I could sometimes control it at events. But then I'd get home and just sit in the dark before I went upstairs to bed and just have a couple more just to top myself up. And I noticed, I guess, also that it was starting to have an effect on me physically. And I sometimes share at AA meetings that I had these Converse sneakers, a couple of pairs of them, and they were, I didn't wear them all that often because they kind of scraped the top of my foot. And after I'd stopped drinking, I had a gap, and they were quite loose. So obviously my body was starting to really, it was taking its toll. So AA is a spiritual program, and for me, coming into the program was accepting that that my life was unmanageable with alcohol in it, and becoming reliant on a higher power of my choosing. It's not a religious program at all. There's a lot of atheists in AA, and everyone's welcome. People have all sorts of different concepts of a higher power, but the fundamentals of it is that it's a spiritual program, and I don't know how it works or why it works, but today is my sixth birthday in sobriety. So I have been sober for 6 years, and this program has given me an opportunity to recreate my identity, be authentic, and you know, develop some pride and self-worth in myself, because my behaviours are normal, and I'm not doing and saying stupid things that have consequences. So, yeah, that's my experience, strength and hope. If you've got a problem with alcohol or you think you may have, come along to a meeting and just try it out for size and find out, You know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for sharing with us this morning, Sarah, and a massive congratulations on 6 years sober. It is an amazing achievement and you are absolutely glowing. I'd now like to introduce our second speaker, Sian.
Kia ora, Sian Alcoholic. Lovely to be at this different format of meeting today. Again, congratulations, Sarah, on a really amazing milestone. I've actually known you for a long time, coming in and out of our Parnell meetings, so it's been really cool to spend this with you today. Your share rang so many bells of my own, Sarah. And, you know, I think I definitely relate to that instant relief that I felt when I first had my first drinking session. Started, you know, drinking pretty much heavily from the get-go, 14, 15, you know, at friends' houses who had older siblings and they had parties and things like that. I was straight into it. And just drunk from the get-go. That's how I drank, you know. I loved the feeling that it gave me. You know, I was very self-conscious and had very low self-esteem growing up. And just that feeling of freedom that it gave me at the beginning was what I chased for a really long time. I just really loved it. I've heard alcoholism described before as, you know, first it's fun, then it's fun with problems, and then it's just problems. And that really does, you know, for me, ring true. You know, I started off having lots of fun when I was drinking. You know, obviously never intended to be an alcoholic, you know, and certainly couldn't understand, you know, from a young age why I was the one at parties who was drinking to blackout and waking up in, you know, strange situations. I was always really confused about my drinking from very early on, I guess, and why I couldn't drink like everybody else and why I was the one that was getting into mischief and mayhem. And I've been through really different stages in my drinking career, as some people would talk about it, you know. First it was that real, like, teenage binge drinking. Then it was binge drinking more often, you know, and then starting to include different bits and pieces and substances along the way. That would take me off on other journeys as well, which, you know, are not alcoholic journeys, but still all tied into the same thing, and that I just really couldn't deal with being me, you know. I was really confused about life. Everything seemed really difficult emotionally, and alcohol was always there to take the edge off and to make me feel that sense of relief. You know, I always drank more than I wanted to, and later on when it came to me, you know, really knowing that I wanted to stop, I couldn't. I could not do it on my own, and I tried lots of different things to stop drinking, and none of them worked, you know, because I'd try and stop drinking for a couple of days, and then everything would be so loud and busy in my mind that I would just need, you know, physically need that sense of relief that I knew alcohol could give me. And, you know, I went on like that for years and years and years, just trying to control it, not being able to, and having this idea in my mind that one day I would be able to control my drinking and drink normally. You know, this time it was going to be different, you know. I'd wake up with a hangover and I'm not going to drink today. You know, that was a bad mistake I made last night and I'm not going to do that again. Lo and behold, 5 o'clock rolls around and you've got a drink in your hand and you're just like, how did I end up here again? You know, and I heard recently someone say that, you know, alcoholics are the people who swear to God they're never going to drink again, and they do. And that just for me was like, yep, that's exactly how it was for me in the end, you know, just constantly making promises to myself that I was going to stop and just not being able to follow through. And, you know, I really did get to that jumping off point where, you know, I remember vividly sitting in my lounge one night, you know, two bottles of wine in and just... like not even looking at anything, but just like looking at my kitchen, just thinking to myself, is this how it's going to be for the next 20 years of my life? Like, is this it? Is this life now? And something kind of changed when I had that thought, because I knew that that was not really a good thought to be having, and it was not really... You know, like on the outside, my life looked pretty good. You know, I had married, car, job. I had all of these material things that, you know, should have been making me happy, and I was so deeply miserable, constantly dissatisfied, discontent, irritable, you know, just all of those classic alcoholic traits, you know, just chronically unsatisfiable, you know, and I did everything to try and feel satisfied in my life, you know. I exercised lots, I ate well, I did all of these things that were meant to make you feel really good, and none of it worked. And I guess that's what people talk about, that kind of like hole in your soul stuff, you know. Nothing I grasped for filled me up. So I finally had to reach the point where I needed help, you know, and I knew that I couldn't help myself. I'd tried everything. So I was lucky enough to have a friend in a different fellowship who, you know, I had talked to about this kind of stuff on and off over a couple of years. She took me to a meeting, and, you know, I listened to the way that people talked about what was going on inside my head and inside of me, and I knew that I was in the right place. And, you know, miraculously, I haven't had a drink since that day, you know, over 6 years ago now. And I know that it doesn't happen like that for everyone, but for me it certainly did. And, you know, I really hope that, you know, people listen to, you know, this show or go to meetings and hear just something that helps them hang on and hope that there is a better life for them and that there is a different way, because I just really, I couldn't understand a life without alcohol. And I feel very grateful today that I know that the opposite is true. So, yeah, my hope is just that, you know, as many people can hear that message and, yeah, turn their lives around as well. So, yeah, thanks for having me today.
Thank you so much, Sian. And now we will pass over to our third speaker, Siddiqui.
Hey everybody, Siddiqui, alcoholic. So grateful to be here. Thank you for this opportunity. Just a couple of basic things that I like to say that I learned to say early in sobriety, which is I've been sober by the grace of God since July. Makes me emotional. July 28th, 1990. And if you saw me, you wouldn't know that I've been sober for 33 years. My home group is the As Bill Sees It in Auckland, and my sponsor is Terry E. from Los Angeles. As you can tell, I'm not from New Zealand, I'm from Los Angeles. So I love what everybody has said, and congratulations on your 6 years, Sarah. It's such a big deal, and it's so great to see you as part of the home group getting sober. You know, I don't want to focus as much on my drinking, because if you're listening to this, I want you to know you're not alone. Sorry, I don't know. I'm so emotional. I think I'm nervous. But I started using not because I liked the taste of alcohol and not because I wanted to fit in. In fact, all of my drinking was by myself. I remember from a really early age just this hypersensitivity that I had to life. My mom says that when I was a baby, she couldn't even bathe me. I was so like spastic and hypersensitive to everything. And that really was the basis of why I used, because I felt like I was almost too sensitive to be a human being. And, you know, the drugs and alcohol wasn't fun. I didn't party. I used it because it was the only way I could kind of feel okay in life. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about that our using only ever ends in one of three things: insanity, institutions, and death. And my drinking and my drug use had progressed so bad by the time that I was in college that I literally ended up as a homeless addict on the streets of New York City. And this is from a family where everybody's a physician, everybody's in medicine, and they couldn't help me. And so when I was in college, I got admitted to a psychiatric ward, which is what they did back in the 80s. If you had addiction or any kind of disorder, they were like, it's a mental disease, so they put you in a locked psychiatric ward. If you've ever seen that movie, Girl Interrupted with Winona Ryder, that was my life without the paycheck of Winona Ryder. But, you know, I was on a locked psychiatric ward for 2 years while they were trying to deal with my addiction and get me off the drugs and treat the underlying mental illness, which I now know was not necessarily mental illness, but it was just an extreme sensitivity. And like Sarah spoke about, I was just very introverted, very self-conscious, like Sean said, very, very low self-esteem. And from being in the rooms for over 35 years, what I know is that female alcoholism is so different than how it shows up in men. Our systems metabolize drugs differently. We have a whole different set of issues that we come into this program with, and a whole other set of unmanageability that is related to our drinking and using. And so if you're listening to this, I encourage you to do what someone told me in the beginning, which is don't compare myself to other people's drinking, the quantity or what happened, but really listen for the similarities in how I felt, because it was my feelings and everything that went with it that caused me to need to drink and use just to get by. And, you know, I had 2 suicide attempts in high school, which led to one of the psychiatric hospitalizations. And when I got out, I realized that there was no program that could save me from myself. You know, one of the doctors said to me, he's like, we think you're constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself. And it says that in the big book under chapter 5, it says how it works. You know, many of us thought that we would fail, but the only thing that causes us to fail in Alcoholics Anonymous, fail to get sober, fail to get the benefits of the program, is an inability to just be honest with ourselves, with our sponsors, with our home group, to reach out and to say, I can't do it. And that's the point that I got to that finally got me sober, is I can't overcome how I'm feeling. I can't control it. And the only solution I have is to numb out with drugs and alcohol. And so for me, sobriety was really extreme in the beginning. I had to go to a meeting every single day. I had a very strict sponsor that was like, you know, we're going to work the steps. You're going to go to a meeting. You're going to get a commitment at a meeting. You're going to call me every day. You're going to call 2 people every day. And what I needed to get and stay sober was I needed the structure of this program. I needed a foundation that was different than the religion I grew up with, that was different than medicine. I needed a community. And what I love about AA is that I moved during COVID, I moved to New Zealand, and this community is global. Like, there is nowhere in the world that you can go that we aren't there ready for you if you need our help and support. I also really love the accountability that we have to each other, to sponsor each other, to be there for each other. And those are things that are free. You know, what is freely received is freely given. And my sobriety is based on my spiritual development. And I have developed so significantly since I got sober in my ability to connect with myself, to a higher power of my understanding, to go back to make amends to my family because I was such a wet hot mess for those years. Like the amount of pain that I caused my family because I was just, you know, they were so worried about me being homeless in New York, but they didn't know what to do. So if you have that place in your life where you feel like you are hopeless, where you feel like you are different, where you are isolated, and you're doubting that this program could help you, I just want to invite you to, as Sarah said, just come and join us or reach out. Thank God for COVID, for all these now online Zoom meetings. There's a Zoom meeting at every hour of every day, no matter where you are in the world. And it works. It really does work. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but it always works if we just show up, open up our hearts, and allow ourselves to receive the support that's here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Siddiqui. Amazing to have you here. Well, that is all the time we have this morning. And a massive thank you to Sarah, Sian and Siddiqui for sharing with us this morning. We're on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. So tune in to Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 229 6757 or you can go to the AA website, which is aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information, including meetings in your local area. So we suggest you check that out. And also, there is a public meeting being held, a public meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's going to be on the 9th of March, 2024. It's from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the Salvation Army building at 18 Allwright Place in Mount Wellington, Auckland. And this is an opportunity to hear speakers share their experience on alcoholism. It's for family members of Al-Anon and members of AA as well. So we welcome you to join us in a friendly, anonymous environment and learn ways to address this problem and the effects of it from people who have walked the journey themselves. We will now close this meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
it's gone on for so long. Meet me at the river. Wash your face.